Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores, making the switch as easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
I am.
All right, guys. What's going on? I'm Jeff Fader from the Full Blast Podcast, and I'm here with Fingal Ferguson. We were going to have the end of the year holiday close out with Fingal Ferguson. So let's take care of a little business and we're going to have some fun. Number one is my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder, and get much better than this. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, you can put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for a 10% discount code on all your grinders, attachments, parts, all that stuff. It is a great grinder, really is a great grinder. And it's a great company, and Ryan and Vince are doing a great job, and Ben and all them guys. And I'm sending you all, you guys at Broadbeck Ironworks, a peaceful, prosperous, happy new year and Merry Christmas, all that. And well, many thanks for being on with me. Next are my friends at Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. Don't get much better than this. If you got to get it hard, use the Even Heat. You know what I'm saying? Get that solid state drive. Get that tap control. I mean, if you're tempering, they have a solitary temper oven. It's just the best kiln on the market. I mean, use it all the time. They're foolproof, and the customer service at Even Heat is the best. So definitely get yourself on board with them. And many thanks to them. I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com for all your knife-making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, and more. And everything. They have a gift guide right on right now for the knife maker. So it's amazing. And Lawrence was listening to Knife Talk, and Craig says, you know what they should have is a section just for gifts for the knife maker, and boom. Lawrence did it. So if you want to get whatever you need, especially if you get the 10 pack of abrasive belts, you get 10% off. I love those guys. I love Lawrence. He's just on top of everything. He's been giving me the Razor Star Norton blades. They're unbelievable for the belts. They're just incredible belts. I would highly suggest giving them a try. They're like the Norton blades, but they're just a little bit more, especially if you're using stainless and you need a little bit of extra, you know, you're looking for a little extra belt per blade, get yourself one of them. So go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. They got the Damn Steel, Baker Forge stuff. They got all that stuff. So, I mean, he got it. And if you don't have it and you want him to have it, you ask him, he'll get it. Next, my friends at Trojan Horse Forge. Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Stabrail knife finishing vise. This is the best. I mean, it's the best if you want to hand sand in comfort, if you want to finish your knives, your handles in comfort. Definitely go to TrojanHorseForge.com and put in the promo code FULLBLAST10 for 10% off everything. The vices are unbelievable. The T4 Sentinel oil is great. The handle press attachment, all that stuff. Definitely get involved with a great company that's trying to make micro manufacturing. They're doing it themselves. It's great. So definitely check out what's going on with TrojanHorseForge.com. I cannot thank enough Baker Forge. BakerForge.com. That's Coy Baker and the guys. Baker Forge a tool on Instagram. If you're looking to get involved with some exotic steels, this is the stuff for you. Bronze My, Tiger My, all this stuff. It's clad steel with usually like there's copper or brass, or there's a pattern welded steel, and then there's a core, a hardenable core. And it's just like, I mean, it is really extraordinary. I've been using it. It's super easy to use. It's very user-friendly. If you're a stock removal person, you're a little bit like intimidated, this is not the stuff to be intimidated for. And they'll hold your hand. The website gives you all the information on what to do. And when it comes to etching it, you got to get yourself that gator piss. You got to stop playing. You got to get that gator piss. The gator piss is the greatest etching around. It's already pre-mixed. You don't have to worry about percentages. You don't have to worry about adding water. Stuff is really, really great. And if you go to bakerforge.com and you put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you can get 10% off everything. Or if you're looking to, you can also go to Texas Ferrier Supply. There are friends at Texas Ferrier Supply. I have a box waiting for me. It's a pile of Rhino Wet. I got some Rhino Wet from Texas Ferrier Supply, and I got a great deal when I used Knife Talk 10, and I got 10% off everything. So definitely go check out what's going on over at Texas Ferrier Supply. Get yourself some of that Baker Forge too. I want to thank my friends at Total Boat, totalboat.com/fullblast, for all your epoxy needs, your paints, primers, polishing compounds. I use their Fathom Thick Set to do a hybrid handle material, and I'm really amazed by it. You don't need pressure pots. I don't need anything. You can get molds. You can get molds from them. You can get molds from other places. It's really easy to work with, and it's really, really great. So go to totalboat.com/fullblast, and listen, I'm going to say it once, and I'm going to say it twice. I'll say it 100 times. I'm only using their epoxy for my knives, for the handle material, and it's great. It really is great stuff, and I really like using it. And I like the fact that I can get a hold of the people at Total Boat to ask them questions. They're really, really responsive. So many thanks to them. You use the hyperlink in the show notes to get involved with that. Many thanks to my friends at Total Boat. This is real special to me. GL Hansen & Sons has been unbelievable. GL Hansen & Sons makes G-Carta, which is that unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure. I kind of chatted with Greg, GL Hansen & Sons, and I'm getting people requesting specific patterns from GL Hansen, so specific G-Cartas, especially the pheasant. I got to get some more of that pheasant because they got people wanting the pheasant. Stuff is awesome. And the color Rama, the hoopla, they have these trout patterns that are really amazing. And Mikey is doing an awesome job. And she's the maker, the designer of the materials. And they're always coming up with new stuff. They're always pushing the limits. And if you're a maker and you're really looking to support other makers, especially small businesses, they're doing really great stuff. Definitely get yourself involved with the GL Hansen & Sons G-Carta. And you can go to gcarta.bigcartel.com and you can order whatever you want. And feel free to reach out to him on Instagram, g.l_Hansen & Sons. All the links are in the show notes. Greg's the man. Mikey's awesome. And they are really they're killing it. And I'm really getting specific requests for specific colors. He's on the map, and you know, it's really going to put some razzle dazzle in your ding dong. You know what I'm saying? And last but certainly not least, I want to thank my good friends at Tormek, celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black TA sharpening system. Their water cooled system's the best. And if you go to Tormek.com or at Tormek_sharpening Instagram, you can see what's going on. But I wanted to say one thing about Tormek. I have one of their Tormeks I got probably like 10 years ago, and I've been beating the brakes off this Tormek. I've been beating the bread off this Tormek to the point where it's making noises. But I'm using it way more. I've been using it for 10 years. And I got a message. I sent a message to my man, Carl, who was on the podcast. And he said, I don't want to get a new one. I don't want to throw it away. There's got to be a way we can replace it. And he goes, we can fix the parts that need to be fixed. So that's the great thing about Tormek, is they're very involved with making sure what you're using is good, but not just throwing it away. They're going to fix your problems. They know how to, all their parts are, you know, replaceable, and it's just a great company. And I'm a huge Tormek fan. And you don't have to be a knife maker to get involved with Tormek. I mean, their main source of business is with woodworkers who need to keep their knives, their chisel sharp and all their planes sharp and all that stuff. So definitely check it out. And it's definitely like, if you got to spend a little bit of cash at the end of the year before the tax man show up, you can get yourself a Tormek or any one of my sponsors. Go spend on the sponsors and make sure that you don't have to pay the government, pay these people. You know what I'm saying? I want to thank my sponsors every year. I cannot believe how supportive they are of this podcast and Knife Talk and everything else. And I can get on the phone with every single one of them, and they're great. And I'm honored to be involved with this. We're all in this together, ladies and germs. We're all in this together, and I'm really grateful to my sponsors. They're dynamite. It's Christmas time, end of the year, guys. And who better to spend it with than my main man, Fingal Ferguson? Fingal Ferguson is the man, the Prince of Ireland. This guy is the... This guy, I mean, he's got the food game locked up. He got the sausage game locked up. He got the cheese game locked up. He got the knife game locked up. I mean, in Ireland, I mean, he's royalty. Fingal Ferguson, what's going on?
Thanks, my friend. I doubt royalty. I don't know, probably like the infamous one that kind of has the bad kudos in the Hello magazine. You know, the one that's always getting into trouble. That would probably be me.
Oh, jeez. I mean, the kind of trouble I hear a lot of royal people getting into. Let's keep you out of that.
There you go. All good. Thank you for having me on the show. Really appreciate it. I always love being here.
How have you been?
Good. This is the crunch week. I'm kind of like a bit roasted out in the brain in some ways. This is the crunch week to sort of find out how many hams and where they're going and who's ordered what for Christmas, and the last week to organize couriers because Christmas falls on a Wednesday. So
right.
That means there's nothing really shipping. I mean, Monday and Tuesday, but like if it doesn't arrive, then that's it. It's screwed. You screwed the pooch. So yeah, we got to get everything out this week. And I think normally, to give you an idea, like we'd probably cure about 30 or 40 hams every week. And then
wow.
We'd cut those up and use that for the markets. But this time now we've done nearly 300 hams that are just kind of going to all the different places doing different things, and some are smoked, unsmoked, on the bone, off the bone, fat, lean, skinned, whatever, for three different farmers markets, or you know, so there's a sort of a logistics thing that's kicking in, and yeah, it's good. I mean, the great thing is what happens by flogging the hams is it kind of helps me to square up with bonuses and sort of that week that we shut down. So it kind of that extra madness for 2 weeks helps us to shut down for one, if you know what
I
mean.
I know exactly what you mean. I mean, that's what I do, as I shut the shop down and I get everybody in the shop gets bonuses. And I love the fact that, I mean, part of the Christmas season to me, especially as I've gotten older, are these little things, like the important parts of like making sure that everyone in my, you know, immediate, you know, whatchamacallit, my vicinity is, you know, kind of taken care of. Like that's kind of, as I've gotten older, that's what I like. And I would imagine that you're kind of the same way.
Yeah. I mean, Christmas is, it's an interesting kind of, it's the biggest break because I suppose, and in many ways it's a kind of a gathering family kind of time. It's a shutdown thing. And it's something that kind of livens up the very dreary old, you know, dark black winter. And I think I've kind of, from when I was a kid, I have a love-hate relationship, and I talked about this last time. I mean, it's an immense amount of frustration for me, and stress and all this kind of stuff that leads up to it. But I suppose, like everything, then when it's done, and you appreciate it, and you kind of calm down, it becomes a normal farm for a week. You know, literally, it's just the family wandering around doing all the little bits and pieces. There's not all the sort of cheese making or, you know, all the other staff and lovely characters that help us out around the place. So it's kind of a nice quiet time. But apart from all that, yeah, we've basically been just, you know, the usual thousand things that break during the week and you know, just kind of focusing on kind of everything. But I got the knife side of things closed out. I did some knife drops in the kind of the beginning of the month to actually kind of catch, like, I suppose, couriers that are going to, say, America or UK or whatever else. So I'm that's the one thing that, you know, I got 99 problems, but the knives ain't one.
But so you, like, you are you pretty much done with that? Are you getting any last minute knife people?
I'm cleaned out and what, oh, wow. And I suppose what I have is I made a kind of a small selection actually last month. I made a selection of little paring knives and petty knives with a friend who, like, one of the guys who works with me, Case. You know, it's kind of like dialing him in and just practicing away with something. You know, it's much easier to learn on small knives. And he really wanted to try and get more of a hand to it. And so he basically spent a while making those. And I've actually wrapped them up in a completely different way. Funnily enough, I actually vacuum packed them. And what I've got is I bought some wooden, like neodymium magnet kind of blocks. And okay. What's kind of fun about them is they actually are, they're magnetic on both sides. I found that they've been sticking onto the side of the van. So we go to the farmer's market, boop, up goes the magnet, stick them up. And then in a separate bag, I got a tea towel with my typical drawing. And a kind of a recreation of the wax seal. And it has generic phrases as opposed to saying what the materials are. You know, made in West Cork and unique design, that kind of thing. And that so basically they get a care pack so they can go and see what they're getting. But nobody gets cut. No one kind of, they don't get rained on or anything like that. If it's a bad weather. So it's a quick fix. And it was a kind of an interesting experiment. And actually what was interesting, most people at the markets kind of were looking for bigger knives. But I think it's supposed to be stocking filler kind of slash impulse purchase kind of idea. And, you know, it seems to be working. I still have two more markets to go and I've done one so far. It was an interesting experiment. The tea towels were a fun idea. That was kind of what brought this all together. I kind of thought, right, you can buy little cases or boxes or presentation kind of type things, but they always get thrown away. You know, the tea towel, which I can just basically take it off the magnet, wrap it up, have a sort of a care instruction thing on the inside. And then, you know, the tea towel, at least, which is kind of, so to speak, the wrapping, is also a handy thing that everybody kind of gets a kick out of, you know, can go up with the other tea towels and get abused in your kitchen like everything else.
It's a great idea. That's the packaging part is always kind of an issue in terms of like, you can buy, boxes are tough because like every different size is different.
And
you want to put a paring knife in where the size of a box or a chef knife is going to rattle around. And I've always wrapped in butcher's paper, but I make Kydex sheaths, which makes it very safe, you know, to wrap up and stuff like that. But I do wish I had something kind of closer to like a tea towel or something like that. It's such a great idea.
Do you know what? The guy who helped me out with this, Vinny, a really wonderful guy. I first met him because he was actually looking for knives for himself. And then he organized the t-shirts for me. So do you know Chef's Table on TV?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so his, one of the producers of that, Brian, his girlfriend, we met a couple of years ago and she was the one who designed my t-shirts. And then I got Vinny and the t-shirt company in Ireland here to print the t-shirts. And it's a screen printing process. And they're actually kind of mad things to watch. It's like an octopus that rotates. It's like kind of a series of irons. And they lift up and then you twist them around and they go to the next color and then it screens and then it goes up to the next color. And so it was like he was very good pricing. It was like an organic cotton thing, you know, less than a fiver, you know, per tea towel. And I'm kind of glad to have another form for the quick process. Because as much as I love my wrapping process, you know, there's a time when you do sort of 20 to 30 of them in a day, at the end of a drop, you kind of, you burn out, you know, fall out of love with the process.
I don't know, because we did a very aggressive sale for Black Friday. And it was a suit, we wanted to like, it was to clear the decks. We had a lot of stuff in stock and then also prepare ourselves for the new website. And we just decided to go aggressive and it was amazing.
I think it
was madness because we I ended up sending probably like 80 boxes over the 4 days. And it was like sharpening and wrapping. And it was madness, total madness. Yeah. But I like that. I mean, I was talking to some other people who are like, they get too, you know, like anxious and stuff like that. But you and I have also been in the service industry. Like you were talking originally about how mad it is at the farm right now. I've been in restaurant. I was talking to my daughter. I worked in the restaurant game during Christmas, during New Year's. I've been in the food service. And then I was with a mail order, a bakery that we did a lot of mail order. Christmas time, and like I'm used to the madness and I kind of like it. And
set up a structure and a process and just do all the prep. It's like your mise en place, you know, mise en place, just get everything lined up and then just go at it, just drive on, because as soon as it's over then you're moving on to the next thing. And actually you get a kick out of the efficiency of the whole process.
I love it. And it was like, it was total madness and it was great. And but at the same time I'm at the point in my life where I'm not behind the eight ball in terms of things. So like I got stuff ready to go. I'm constantly saying, look, and basically on what you were saying, I got a message from the post office saying that if you want things to get arrive using USPS to in the United States, you got to get everything up by the 19th. So I've been kind of like, don't wait. But the fun part is like, I'm all up to date. There's a couple orders that we are waiting for material to come in and we can't really get it in on time. And the customers know that it's not going to make it for Christmas just because they order really late and they want something very specific. But I love this time of year now because I really do love kind of making things happen for people. And like, there's something about it. It's just like, I love this time of year. I love it more now than I ever have.
There's something, you know, a winter when it's crisp and dry. I mean, fuck it. Winter when it's wet and pissing rain and the wind is coming in sideways is not fun. But, you know, those cold, crisp, wintry days are kind of good. The one thing I find funny, I think we probably have the same thing. What time is it dark in the morning and dark in the afternoon? Is it kind of...
The sun doesn't really come up until like 6:45 in the morning. So like 6:45, it starts to kind of peak out now. And then it gets dark at around kind of 4:45. It's like, that sucks. I hate that.
It's the same kind of vibes here. So yeah, basically you're getting up in the dark and you're going to, you know, and you're kind of finishing work in the dark.
So
that's kind of discombobulating. I mean, you definitely find yourself sort of like, what day is it? What time is it? But you know, that's just the time of the year, but actually it's kind of like that again, back to Christmas lights and all these things. I have them all set up to timers and they're all around the farm. So they all kind of come on. At least that brings a little bit of the Christmas cheer to the whole thing.
Your family, you're getting excited for Christmas? The whole family's getting ready? I know you have family.
I mean, like, I've got five kids, the youngest being a girl. Eldest is 14, down to what is she? She's, God, is she?
Hurry up.
I know. She's young. But they are. I mean, like, that means we still have maybe some Klingerons to Santa, and there is still that whole kind of vibes. But, I mean, my eldest now, he's hilarious, because he's now, you know, kind of got patchy stubble kicking in, and he's alpha maling, you know, balls out to the other brothers as the pubic hair is like, you know, the whole thing. So it's like the fucking world needs to know as he kind of wanders through the place. And I kind of like that. I kind of get a kick out of that, because he, you know, that's the hilarious thing about it. I love that confidence, you know, balls out walking around the place. And you know, he's the two eldest have kind of got into their river rowing. There's a local club, Skibbereen, which is quite famous. They're by these wonderful characters who won the Olympics on several occasions. And it's a small, you know, we've got a small, very agricultural, rural rowing club where, you know, you go to Henley or you go to, you know, any of the kind of the universities, you know, Oxford or whatever else that has like rowing clubs. And Trinity or whatever, and you kind of see all this fantastic equipment and these wonderful things and these things. And like, basically in West Cork, they have their wellies on and they grab the boat over the shoulder and they throw it into the river and they throw the wellies back on and they just row to their hearts, like they just row like fucking madmen. And it's a community that's made this kind of club quite famous. And my wife rowed, so she kind of got them into it. And Olin, my eldest, who I'm kind of, was probably a lot like myself, you know, kind of an innocent, easygoing, kind of wandering around happy to just see what happens every moment kind of type character. She's got him into this rowing. And it's an interesting, that focus that I didn't really go looking for myself, but I can now respect to see that driving force of kind of the club or the sort of the group and seeing the achievement. And also, to be God, he's going to be a fit son of a bitch, you know, as well, compared to myself. And they've just had a wonderful, there's an event called the head of the river. Basically, it was kind of an in-house kind of race, and the two boys did really well in their own things. I think they kind of came first in some of the races. So it's just lovely seeing that, the kind of the kids growing in that kind of respect and getting in. And then Oscar, who's number two, I went foraging with him yesterday, and that was amazing. It was just, was it Sunday? Yeah. So Sunday, the two of us, I just put the forge on, and we have two anvils there, and just, we basically went, he was asking to give it a go. And my power hammer's coming, hopefully at some point, coming over from Albert in Austria. So I'm kind of really looking forward to this. So I just kind of want to sort of dial in a bit and kind of play around with the forge. And, you know, it was fun, you know, that the whole thing of hitting a bit of hot metal with your son, you know, that proud moment, you know, even though the two of us, what I did was I actually had some tongs that were like off the shelf with the kind of very crappy round bar that were quite short.
Yeah.
And I basically just tweaked the shit out of them, kind of put another couple of inches on them, stretched them out, flattened them out so they're a bit more springy. And that was my kind of I kind of feel like practice, it's nice when you have something that you're actually trying to achieve as opposed to, you know. So I didn't mind these off-the-shelf cheap tongs kind of being used as a sort of the guinea pigs.
You gotta, that, I mean, that stuff is, you gotta get it to like get to until you find the right stuff for you. I mean, that's just the way it is. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. So how did your son feel about, did he enjoy it or?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, look, do you know, the thing is when we have the power hammer, we're going to focus more. We'll probably be trying to achieve something. At the moment, this is just mindlessly just hit a bit of metal. Feel what it's like to hold in the tongs. Experiment with it. Don't try to make anything. Don't give yourself a challenge. And, you know, it was just an hour. He just kept putting in and out the same piece of metal and just tweaking it, and I mean, we were both having fun. He's kind of copying me, what I was doing with the anvils with his bit of sort of steel. And he had a bit of ATCRV2, which is very unforgiving.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably should have given him a bit. I should have given him a bit of mild steel, but yeah, that's next time.
What happened? Give him a piece of mild steel, a little bit of rebar.
Yeah, because I mean, that's something I want to do next year. I want to kind of go and spend some time with some of the local blacksmiths and play around, you know, with that, because luckily there's a few in the area.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And kind of put a hand to these things. I mean, there's a lot of clever things you can do. And I love all the local blacksmiths are always selling tongs and, you know, sort of bottle openers and all these things with very clever kind of goat's heads and sort of embellishments that are sort of, you know, when you kind of run the angle grinder multiple nicks and then give it a half twist and then a bit in the opposite direction. You know, it's very simple but brilliant kind of things that they just make look very easy that I'm sure are going to fuck up when I try it. But
you'd be surprised. Yeah. Everything's hard the first time. I mean, blacksmithing, it's all just like tricks and doing it every so often. But it reminds me, a friend of mine needs a fireplace set, and he asked me if I'd make them. I'm like, yeah, of course. And he and I go see the Knicks basketball team, and he says, what do you want to charge? What will you charge me? And I said, get me some Knicks tickets. Let's go see the Knicks. And I'm just trying to get a couple jobs. I like to do a couple things between Christmas and New Year's where it's kind of
It's a beautiful idea. Get the adventures in. Otherwise, it's just the mundane. You know, when you get trapped in the Groundhog Day, you know, these things are kind of, they're important. You know, the getting out of your routine and going and do something kind of big and, you know, and wonderful. I'd say there's nothing like watching a Knicks game.
There's nothing. I mean, at this point in time, I mean, I'm not going to bore you with New York sports, but I mean, the Knicks are like I've been going to see the Knicks forever. And this high school friend and I go every year and we love it. And it's expensive now. So I told him, I said, you better not get him cheap seats though. But this fireplace set, you better get us some like good seats now. Don't be cheap with me. But I love doing little projects that are kind of like, not really between Christmas and New Year. I always give myself a couple like fun projects. Like I'm going to make a couple hammers. I get some hammer stock coming in. I want to make a couple hammers for me. I don't really sell them. I don't do any of that. I'm not interested in becoming a hammer maker. I just like doing them and then using the hammers that I make. And I'm going to make some fireplace tools and I'm going to fool around. And what we do at the end of the year is right before Christmas, like a New Year's, a Christmas Eve, we'll clean the shop up and we'll do a real big shop cleanup. So when we come in fresh, I guess January 2nd, it'll be nice and clean and we have a lot of work already to do. But
that's a good feeling.
it's a, you know, this time between Christmas and New Year is just, I love it because number one, my daughter's home from college, which is the best. But it is nice to kind of, it's just, there's something about this kind of like ending the year and a rebirth and trying to be positive and doing all these great things with family, and we eat like pigs and it's always fun. And I this time of the year, the older I get, I like it for different reasons.
Yeah. 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 No, I'm with you on that one. I think that's fantastic. The reset and the kind of the spring clean, I think kind of coming into it. I kind of do that. I'm actually surprised myself by how much I like kind of, do you know the character from Canada, Matthew Matheson?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic character. I mean, very entertaining in many ways. Mad as a bag of cats. Somebody I'd kind of love to meet at some point just for the energy that he has. But the one thing I loved was he was making donuts in a sort of a sadomasochistic kind of leather one piece, you know, kind of outfit. You know, and I thought it was like, as he said himself, it was the weirdest outfit because he's going to get splashed by hot oil a lot, you know, in his thong and his whatever else. Big fat man in a leather clad kind of outfit who's just kind of making these things. And he just shouted this one phrase, which has just stayed in my head the entire time, which is, "Daddy likes a clean space." And that phrase, I don't know where it came from. I feels like everybody probably knows it, and I don't know who started that line, but it is true that I kind of think of that when I start doing my little my kind of spring clean, even if it's the middle of winter. It's not OCD, but you know damn well you can find things in their places, and actually just makes you feel good. It's a little endorphin rush of sort of like, ooh, everything's in its place now, let's get back to it.
It's tough because like today was I had a late start because the snow came down so hard, our roads were completely packed. I couldn't get past for about an hour. So I came in, got some stuff prepped for tomorrow, and then I sent some stuff out in the mail. And then I did spend about 45 minutes just cleaning this one area. And it did feel good to kind of just be like, all right, we already established that we're going to really do a big cleanup at the end of the year, but you know what, let's just give it a little start in. And it did feel pretty good.
Yeah.
Question for you.
Yeah,
back to the farm. Gabin, you're making cheese, you're making beautiful hams and sausages and all this stuff. You sent me this beautiful package a year ago,
the hide the salami and package.
And then the goddamn the ATF, the border patrol fucking took all the sausage, which was,
well, I can't believe Texas, I mean, like Ben Snur got his full box. I can't believe that Texas is that bit more relaxed than New York, but then maybe that is actually
I have the note of what they of what they said. I have it framed on the wall I have that next to a letter from the owners of Pappy Van Winkle. So you're in good
okay,
hands.
Okay, there you go.
So
good man.
So do you like when you now the time of the year, do you have like families who have been coming to us every year and saying, Fingal, we needed a ham for Christmas? Do you have any of these relationships with these families that come every year and get a ham?
They all are. I think my sister now does the farmers markets more than I do. I mean, I'm in the workshop now on the weekends, and I think that kind of big change over where my sister took over for me doing the farmers markets, I think she's the one who kind of has probably got that infrastructure kind of more of the faces and the routines. And I think that, yeah, there is definitely a case, and I recognize all the names, and there's a huge, I mean, like there's 80 to 90%, you know, the same names and characters from last year with new ones on it. And it's great. And I think what happens is, do you know what stands out in some ways is probably what we're doing with the traditional element of it is like we're not free range organic. I'd love it if we were that level of thing. We're kind of small farmer, combination of rare breeds. They're indoors in winter and straw pens. And so we're doing a lot of these things we feel the right way, but we're not like the echelon of the whole thing. But where I feel like we do step up is probably the process of making it. Like our bacon takes 2 weeks to dry cure, and it's massaged and turned multiple times during that. And the hams are brined in a very traditional kind of Irish brine that also has a bottle of wine in there and a bouquet garni that has, you know, rosemary, thyme and juniper and a few other flavors, and then a bottle of wine. So we kind of have this juicy ham and this, you know, kind of firm sort of, you know, air dried kind of bacon for the rashers and that kind of side of things. So there's these, what we have is we really put our time and care into a lot of the bits and pieces to actually stand out. And the hams kind of have this uniqueness. Now, I think if you ever try commercial ham, what they tend to do is put a kind of a brine into it, and then it goes into these cement mixes that travel very slowly, and then the salt, the fat, the water, and from the brine, everything amalgamates to become kind of a water-soluble protein, and then they come out and they're put into a mold or they're put into a bag, and it kind of magically sticks together. And when you cook them, you take a slice of these hams, you can almost see tiny little air bubbles in them, and that's because basically this is, you know, you've more or less maximized and increased the yield from the brine. I mean, in some cases there's even wallpaper paste in the ham brines to kind of create that, the equivalent of it, to actually keep the brine in there. But it has that kind of rubbery texture. So commercial ham, and there's nothing wrong, because what it is in that case is just it's making affordable food for people out there. On the other end of the scale, what we're doing is we're brining the hams, but you know, so much of that brine comes out afterwards. But we always know, like, if you brine a turkey or you brine something before you cook it, it kind of, you know, keeps a lot of the juices in there, which comes out during the cooking process. But our hams are, we use something called seam butchery. So we follow the seams of the muscle. So basically there is like kind of three or four really kind of shit hot, wonderful muscles in the leg, and we kind of are focusing on those, and everything else becomes salamis and sausage or whatever else. So with seam butchery, you're doing this whole process of actually cherry picking out the best bits, and there's no disguising it. There's no kind of, you know, just, you can't really give a shredded piece of shitty ham, you know, and, you know, expect somebody to kind of be impressed by it at the end. You have to, and that's why we kind of have so much salami and ham. We're cherry picking out these cuts. So long story short, what I'm kind of getting at is that it's more expensive, it takes more time, everything about it is kind of there, but it is definitely that Christmas treat that is kicks in, and it's a sort of a very typical Irish tradition. You know, the ham is high up there, you know, the ham, the turkey, the goose kind of type thing on the Christmas table.
Wow. Yeah, you're getting me hungry. You're getting me hungry or excited. You're getting me excited. So, and I remember asking you this last year, I'm going to ask you again. At what point do you start to kind of keep your eye on a specific ham for the family? Do you like mark one out, or what makes the ham that you want on your table? What's going to make the cut?
Well, do you know, literally, what's going to make the cut? Yeah. Do you know what we've kind of done is that from the end of summer, some October onwards, we start cherry picking out good pork legs, and we freeze them straight away after the butchering, and we put them aside to be our Christmas kind of sort of allotment for the Christmas week, because we're going to need 300 of them, you know, in that Christmas week, which doesn't make sense because we normally butcher about 20 pigs a week. So how do we do it? And that's basically by cherry picking these good pork legs and kind of, or the specific cut in question. We pack those up, freeze them, and we've got these big kind of powerful blast chiller that freezes it very quickly, and then we have a controlled defrost process. And what we'll do is when we take that out, then we put them into the brines, and that kind of allows us to have, you know, all these. So really it's all about what you start off, the quality of what you start off with is the whole thing. And I think there's this fine line. I always find it really funny. The farmers markets I go to in the rural areas like Skibbereen and the one that's kind of closer and more, I kind of call more rural. And then you go to the city, Cork City in our case, and you find that there's two very interesting things. I find that everybody still pays with cash in the country, and I love a bit of kind of a fat rasher and these kind of these. They're not afraid of, you know, that miviness of, you know, leanness and all this kind of stuff, which you'd find in the city. And in the city, you're expecting people to want the leanest one there, and they'll pay with a card. And, you know, there's yeah. It's funny. You still have these stereotypical kind of slight things, but you can't tar everybody with the same brush. But you do still find these sort of trends that kind of happen. And that's what's brilliant for us, is that we kind of have this spectrum to work with. And yeah, there's the gut instinct that kind of kicks in. What I've done now is that we kind of have most of the ham orders in because people have known in the past that we sell out. So what will happen is that we kind of know that we're going to need 100, or no, like we're probably going to need like 25 5-kilo hams, 30 3.5-kilo, and I kind of can do the numbers and how many, then afterwards whether they're smoked or not can be sorted out. So I basically kind of today, like, for example, I was raiding into the stack of 4 kilos, 5 kilos. So once I go through the list, so-and-so wants this ham, this size, this thing, I go to the pile, I take it out of that pile and I put it in and I sort them out. And then whatever I'm missing from the end of that day, I'm just going to take care of tomorrow with the last run of hams that we have coming out of the brine. And hey, presto, I'll either be stressed out, pulling my hair, saying, fuck it, the numbers don't make sense, or I'll be like, woohoo, we're done. And that's kind of it. And then you just hope that everything goes well towards the end. I've got a great crew. I mean, there's a wonderful gang that kind of keep the ball rolling. And I just come in now to take care of this one kind of unusual job that means the routine stays in place for everybody else. And it kind of good. One of the things that I have a little project I'm running at the moment is a little thing. I've been squaring off the hams. So you have all these little offcuts of perfectly good pieces of ham. So I'm actually planning tomorrow making a batch of very fancy Spam.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I found like if you look, Spam is basically the most, it doesn't have the best reputation in the world, but all these things come from a very innocent source. It's just they become tarnished as a sort of a junk food or whatever else. But I mean, if you go to Hawaii, if you go to most places in Asia, there still is this huge obsession with this kind of thing. So I'm actually trying to make a high-end fancy one that's going to be kind of like a cooked version of a big salami size, as opposed to in those little tins you open up. But that's one project for tomorrow on the sideline, because then I can use up these little pieces. And I think deep down, it's a comfort food. I think we all kind of secretly, you know, won't have a problem tucking into.
Well, the interesting thing about Spam is my dad, if he was alive right now, he'd be 100, and he served in World War II, and he used to eat Spam a lot. I mean, that was part of the whole thing. And actually, I was listening to a reel with Jacques Pepin, Chef Jacques Pepin, and he says when he was growing up in France during World War II, they didn't have a lot of money, and they didn't have a lot of things, and they would eat Spam every so often. And it was a real important part of like of easy way for people to get, you know, meat, and it, you know, needed to be refrigerated. It was canned. It was all squared away. And my sisters, who are much older than I am, when they were growing up, when I grew up, I never had Spam. I never had it once. To this day, I've never had it. Yeah. But when my sisters were young, they used to tell me that Dad would make Spam all the time. Mm. And it was like he made a conscious decision that I'm not making this food from when I was eating it in World War II anymore. Because I never had it. Never had it once.
You see, there is this honest background of things where they all come from.
Right.
And I mean, but just to kind of stir the pot and for shits and giggles, there is this element, like there's friends of mine who, you know, great chefs, but they love doing these random things, which I don't know are to kind of take the piss, or actually deep down are just delicious. But you kind of, you know, when you see people eating, you know, caviar with Pringles, right, or making, right, you know, sort of donuts with, you know, foie gras in the center, right, and, you know, right, and there is this sort of element of kind of, part of me is kind of like, look, great, there's some of my customers, you know, I know are going to put their hand deep into the pocket to make this one meal fantastic. But at the same time, on either side of it, there's always this God, I haven't had Spam in so long. And there'd almost be like a snobbery where they wouldn't reach out for Spam on the shelf over here. It might be seen as something, or you wouldn't be even appetizing as an idea. But maybe part of them is like, but why, I'm going to try this, you know. So I don't know. It's another one of the experiments, and I think I've done it before and it worked out. But I kind of have a different approach on how I'm going to kind of make this one.
But you know, it's interesting you say that, because there's so many different things that I grew up on that started out as being kind of like, I mean, bologna in the United States was something that I grew up on eating, bologna. Mm-hmm. And then, so now everyone is, you know, which came from Bologna, and that was originally mortadella, and they didn't call it mortadella when it came to the United States, called it fucking bologna.
Yeah, yeah.
And the crazy part is like every time I see these videos of people eating mortadella sandwiches famous Anthony Bourdain sandwich with mortadella, in my mind, all I could think of is high-end bologna.
But I love it when it gets Americanized as well, where you get the gabagool, huh? You got to get gabagool. The gabagool. I mean, I've been all over Italy, and I have never heard of gabagool in my life, but it's a very catchy phrase.
Well,
name.
That's, I tell you what's funny about that is we have this supermarket. My daughter has fallen in love with the Sopranos. She's watched every episode of The Sopranos. She loves these gangsters. We make a lot of Italian food at home, and she says all the, you know, Tony Soprano things, and she's just hilarious. And we found that there's this new supermarket within the past couple of years that's opened up around us, and it's called Uncle Giuseppe's. And it is a giant superstore, but all Italian food, but it's like American Italian food. So they have a whole section on gabagool. And then and my wife and my daughter can't even control them. They always be like, yeah, I don't think we're going to get some gabagool. And it's hilarious because it's true. Italians, it's like this weird bastardization of language, you know, and it's hilarious. And we follow
Italy,
all these.
Italy's a big place and it's so regional. And you have the north and the south and Sicily and all these different areas. One of my favorite Italian shops that I went to was called Italy, E-A-T-L-Y.
Oh, yeah.
What a brilliant name. But I think they know comfort food and they know to make things taste good. But they also mix still the nostalgia. I mean, like Christmas. Actually, do you know what? We probably pull this out in a second. I did a bit of research for Shits and Giggles, and I have traditions from around the world. One of them, of which, of course, in Italy, what's it called? It's the pig's foot, and it's mixed with cotechino, but it's stuffed. So cotechino has a lot of the skin that's boiled, and then it's minced down with other meats and has lots of spices in there, a little bit of cinnamon and clove and
there are oats in there
like
too
that.
it's not too dissimilar
maybe there's some oats but then the pig's foot is taken off the bone, the hoof obviously not, but the bit that would have been under the hoof, and it's stuffed with this meat and then sewed closed, and then that's very gently simmered, wrapped up in a tea towel for half a day, and it becomes this sticky, unctuous, incredible meat that's kind of eaten with lentil de puy, like some, with lentils.
Right.
And that's one of those things that when you kind of the taste it, you know, I think one of my kids would freak out, but I love it.
I had haggis once. A friend of mine worked for Johnny Walker, and they invited us to. What's the famous famous poet that's involved with
Burns.
Is it Robert Burns? We went to a Robert Burns. Is it Robert Burns?
I'm not sure. Burns Night. All right. Just know it from Burns Night.
Burns Night. And we went to this thing, and then they drink whiskey, and then they read poetry, and then we had haggis.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've ever had haggis, and I was just like, you know what? This is pretty good.
The lungs, liver, and the hearts. I know.
It was not bad. I mean, it's not like I'm gonna order it on, you know, regularly, but it was like I was glad to try it, and I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I think it was great. I don't remember.
Washed down with a lot of whiskey.
Yeah, with a lot of whiskey, everything's great. I
mean, yeah, but okay. Here's the one for you: Irish whiskey or Scottish whiskey? Scotch or whiskey?
Great question. And I'll tell you the problem. My father was a huge Dewar's drinker. Not when I say huge,
what's
like when
Dewar's?
He ordered
Dewar's?
When Dewar's was Scotch.
Okay,
Scotch whiskey. And it was kind of on a white label, and he would order when he would get Scotch for himself, he'd get white label Dewar's. And then I thought it was too aggressive for me. Like I liked Irish whiskey when I was, especially when you're younger, you're drinking Jameson's and you're drinking, you know, whatever.
God, so easy to drink.
We get whatever. So now I'm not a big whiskey drinker, but I do like Scotch because I'm less likely to bang it down. It can't be too delicious because then it's going to go down a little faster than it would be if it wasn't
the glutton in me still warms to delicious and leans towards these things.
I like delicious too, but in my mind I know delicious today means fucked up tomorrow. So like I'm 51, Fingal. I have a very delicate situation. So the day two, even like if I have two IPAs, the next day I feel it and I'm just like
I'm actually drinking one now. There's a rapper called Prof, and he's got a song that kind of goes by like that. Do you know that expression? You'll regret it in the morning.
Yeah.
And then the main chorus line is, I sleep till noon. So if you don't wake up in the morning, you're not going to regret it. But
well, there you go.
There you go. That's it. So, just sleep in the day after. You won't regret it. Not that we have that chance. Do you know what?
You know what? Go ahead.
I was going to say, I have these 12 countries
that do the weirdest
traditions, 12 different places around the world. And I'm just going to fly through these because I just thought
there
was something kind of fun. Okay.
So go ahead.
We'll do it. We'll do it. It'll just come out. So number one, Japan. Did you know that in Japan, all they want for Christmas is KFC?
Yes, I did know that.
There you go. It's a huge KFC tradition. Due to a combination of tiny Japanese ovens and clever marketing campaign, convincing locals that fried chicken is a traditional American Yuletide feast. Now, they all reserve it, and they basically have to reserve KFC, and that's the demand is such that
huge.
Online service has been created, and the family bucket. So basically, Japan and KFC is huge.
That is, I heard about that, and then when you see the packaging of it all, and how
it's the colonel with Santa outfit.
I tell you what though, we for years when we used to go to parties and we just didn't, and it was a potluck, I would say to my wife, I was like, you know what, we should just show up with a traditional bucket of fried chicken and see what happens. People go fucking ape shit for that, and they love it. And there's some kind of, I mean, there's something to the getting that bucket of fried chicken. It's the same thing. There's a fast food place around here in New York, called White Castle, and you can get a suitcase full of burgers.
A suitcase.
So you can get a suitcase. It's like literally like a suitcase. And you show up to somebody's house, and you got this big old White Castle suitcase, and it's like there is something about it that is very like. I mean, it's extravagant. You kind of know what you're getting yourself into.
There's a guy,
so
Motz.
I get it.
You know,
I totally
there's
get
this
it.
Guy, Motz Burger. He's
the guy
who I'm fascinated by him. He's kind of restoring a lot of the kind of forgotten traditions all around the States of all the different burgers, the ones with peanut butter or the fried onion burgers and stuff. Like, I'm fascinated by him. I think he's very interesting. And I find that me and junk food have this kind of mixed relationship because I love junk food. But of course, the downside is, of course, I always feel like shit after it because kind of, if you don't eat on a regular basis, it plays a toll. But I know it doesn't stop me ever wanting to go for it and kind of tuck in. But
I know Moats has a, or he's got a restaurant in
He's just
in
opened
New York
his
City.
Own place, yeah. I'm
it's
sure it's going to be a chain
all
soon,
American.
Is it?
All American Burger, and it's like hard to get into. A friend of mine just went there, but it's like a long line to get in there. We walked past it once. I'm just like, I'm not waiting for this.
Yeah, because that's our go-to for the kids here. We do a good smash burger, and the kids just like, there's no going back. You know, there's no going back once you kind of have that down. And actually, the one I want to try is a proper hot chicken. You know, the kind of southern hot chicken. I don't want to have my
Nashville
ass handed to me,
chicken,
but Anyway, we're moving on to number two, Norway. Norwegians believe that Christmas Eve coincides with the arrival of evil spirits and witches, and it is only logical that Norwegian households hide all the brooms before they go to sleep. After all, nothing spoils Christmas quicker than finding a broom and broken piece in the foot of the tree smashed. So there you go. In Norway, they hide their brooms on Christmas Eve.
Love it.
Number three, Caracas, Venezuela. In the week leading up to Christmas, Venezuelans attend a daily church service called Misa de Aguardado, early morning mass. In the capital, Caracas, it is customary to travel to the church service on roller skates. So widespread is the practice. Many roads of the capital are closed until 8 a.m. to provide Christmas worshippers with safe package. Passage, sorry. Okay.
Hilarious.
I love it. Number four, Austria. Facing your Christmas demons. In Austria, St. Nicholas has an evil counterpart called Krampus. He is the bad cop to St. Nick's good cop, a demon-like creature with one task, to punish bad children before Christmas. Men dressed in devil costumes roam the streets carrying chains and baskets for abducting especially bad children and hauling them to hell. It is certainly one way of to keep the kids off the streets. So that's Austria doing the opposite of Santa Claus.
Have you seen their videos of like the Krampus parades? Those are probably the most amazing. I've heard about Krampus, and you know, all these friends of mine from they like the fact that it's like, you know, they beat the kids. If you're not good, you get beaten by Krampus. But there are these parades.
Who gives a shit if you get coal if you're going to get coal in your stocking for Christmas, as opposed to actually somebody's going to whip the shit out of you.
Somebody's going to put you in a bag and beat you up. Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. We never
beat
had
a bag
never,
of oranges.
No one ever heard about that. No one ever heard of that in the United States. There was no like it was no there was no crime and punishment in it was like you weren't going to get anything. That's about it. But what I love is you can get these, you can see these reels and these videos of these parades. And the costumes are like really, really amazing. And everyone's playing an instrument and they're carrying these torches. And all the costumes are like thick hay with hoofed foots and chains. And it is terrifying to the point where, like, if I ever saw one of these real Krampus parades, I would probably... I, It's terrifying. They're terrifying. It's amazing.
Well, sometimes if you look at Day of the Dead in New Orleans and all these kind of things, you know, maybe we just take them for granted. I think it's kind of an interesting one. So to counteract that, in Catalonia in Spain, at number five, pooping their way through Christmas, the bizarre Catalan tradition of cagatio, or the defecating log. Locals in Catalonia create a character out of a log, drawing a face on it and giving it a hat. And then they spend a fortnight feeding it fruit, nuts, and sweets. And on Christmas Eve, the entire family beats the log with sticks and sings a traditional song that translates to, "If you don't crap well, I'll beat you with a stick," until the log excretes all its treats. It's hard to comprehend why the tradition has caught on elsewhere. They also decorate their nativity scenes with small pooping ceramic caganeras, or figurines, usually well-known characters, often draw from this year's Eve. The figurines always have their pants around their ankles.
I've seen this. Last time we were in Barcelona, I'd heard about this. Like these famous dolls, and it almost looks like a little human Pinocchio.
Yeah, it's like Elf on a Shelf that takes a shit.
And then there's just sitting on this giant log of shit. It's just like, and they're in these, they're cute, and it's fucking bizarre. And it's just like, you wonder why Catalan is a dying language. No. I mean, this
but what
is,
about what about South Park and Mr. Hankey? You know, Mr. Howdy Ho. You know, the
I love these. Keep going.
Okay, so that's Catalonia and Spain.
Fucking
Sweden.
Catalonian.
I know. Six, Sweden. You'll love this giant goat. This unusual tradition at least has a lengthy history. Its origins begin in the 11th century with a mention of a man-sized goat figure that accompanied St. Nicholas. Now it's got a lot bigger. Cities across Sweden construct Yule goats at the beginning of the Advent every year, with the most famous being in Galve, a straw structure that often reaches a whopping 40 feet. Unfortunately, it does attract people who want to turn into a giant bonfire, and the display has been sadly destroyed around 36 times since 1966.
Jeez, so get it don't, together, don't
make,
Sweden.
I know, but don't make your giant characters out of straw. But, it only takes one fucker with a match, doesn't it?
I tell you what, Sweden is a beautiful country, and the people are very nice. I'm surprised that they light things on fire like that. But
they're good characters. I'm going over to my godson / cousin is getting married in Norway, so I've got an adventure to Norway next year. I'm really looking forward to that. I've never actually done. I actually have never been to Scandinavia, so that's going to be a great adventure.
Dude, yeah. Sweden is beautiful. I love Sweden. I love the people are really nice.
Yeah,
you got to learn about fika. It's very fika.
Yes,
is very important.
Fika, brilliant. It's like taking. Isn't it break or more like a kind of a? It's kind of your lunch break or more of a kind of a Levens's kind of thing, or is it more in the afternoon?
There's like usually like two of them.
Okay,
but I think it's a very cultural thing. Like they're. There's cinnamon buns that is very that Swedish cinnamon bun is very classic, but it's to fika. And apparently, fika was they figured out that like the most accidents were happening at these two particular times of the day, and then they decided to make it a forced coffee break at those two times of the day.
Yeah.
And now it's like this very cultural thing to sit and have fika, and it's very communal, and it's a very strong coffee break.
But it also is community. I mean, like I feel like a lot of our staff and the gang who work with us here, you know, our breaks, there's laughter and fun. And everybody gets together and does it properly, you know, it should be a time to actually relax and communicate and bond with everybody else. I think that's a good thing. And like, that's probably where the Latin families and everyone who kind of have these amazing lunches and dinners that take, you know, more than just 20 minutes, you know, actually kind of live longer and happier in many ways.
Yeah, you got a point there.
Now, seven, Guatemala. Yes. How clean is your house? In Guatemala, cleanliness really is next to godliness. Locals believe that the devil and other evil spirits live in the dark, dirty corners of your home. Therefore, they spend the week before Christmas sweeping up, collecting rubbish, and then piling everything in a heap outside. Finally, an effigy of the devil is placed on top, and the whole thing is set on fire. It's called La Quema del Diablo, the burning of the devil. And the idea of the Guatemalans is to burn all the bad from the previous year and start a new year out from the ashes. There you go. I like it.
I'm not mad about that.
No.
Nothing wrong with that. Love it.
Number eight, Ukraine. Deck the halls with spider webs. In addition to the standard tinsel, fairy lights and baubles, Ukrainians have to throw an artificial spider and a web on the tree as well. The tradition has its origin in an old tale of a poor woman who couldn't afford to decorate her tree and woke up on Christmas morning to discover a spider had covered in a glorious sparkling web. It's for good luck, and it's not about poor housekeeping. So,
spider webs. Yeah, I like that too.
Interesting. Maybe it can work. Looks a bit more like a Halloween decoration, I think, but it's I like the idea. Now, number nine, Portugal, dining with the deceased relatives. During Consada, the traditional Christmas feast in Portugal, families sometimes set extra places at the dining table for deceased relatives. It's thought that the practice will ensure good fortunes for the household. In some areas, crumbs are left on the hearth as well, and your thought and you thought feeding all your living relatives was hard enough. So that's,
there you go.
I like that. I actually kind of,
I like
it's
it
like,
too.
It's like raising a glass to the, yeah, I kind of like that. I think it's a fantastic idea.
They do that in the Jewish religion too, that where you set a seat for,
is it one place or multiple? In
one
some cases,
place, it's just, first, it's for this, I forgot the guy's name, and I'm a terrible Jewish person. I don't have it right now, but it's, you set a seat and then, you know, it's a nice thing. I'm for it.
I like that. So number 10, Italy, where Santa's little helper is an old witch. Unable to conclusively prove the existence of Santa, the Vatican decided to throw its weight behind something they had had countless dealings with, an old witch called La Befana, who delivers presents to kids in Italy. The story goes that the three wise men invited the witch to accompany them to see the baby Jesus. She said she was too busy and the legend was born.
I love that too.
There you go. Number 11, Chechnya. A pair of matchmakers. On Christmas Eve, unmarried Czech women stand with their backs to the door and toss one of their shoes over their shoulder. If it lands with the toe facing the door, it means they will be married within the year. And if it lands with the heel facing the door, they're in for another year of being single.
Oh, Jesus. If only that were the true.
I say you get pretty good. You probably practice, don't you? I mean,
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. You definitely like.
You can
make
imagine
sure
cheating,
have,
kind of throwing extra weights into your boots and stuff like that. You know, the toe.
God. Can you just imagine just like the shrugging of the shoulders? Oh, God. Another year. Another year. Or, oh, fuck. I got to marry somebody. Either way.
Okay, and number 12, the last one, Germany. Fill your boots. On the evening of the 5th of December, German children leave a boot or a shoe outside their bedroom door in the morning. If they've been good, they will wake up to find a shoe filled with sweets. If they haven't, they will find only a branch. Obviously, it is best to leave out the newest pair of shoes you own, preferably fresh out of the box. There you go.
Yeah. Jeez Louise.
So, Christmas traditions from around the world.
I love those Christmas traditions.
What's yours?
Well, you know what the traditions that I love the most? I love the stories. I mean, when I was a kid, we did Santa Claus. I mean, my father, I feel like, you know what the weird thing is when my father was Jewish, but I feel like that he was just trying to like, he was into, when we married my mother, my mother's Roman Catholic, and I think that he was trying to like start anew, and I think he really enjoyed the whole Christmas thing. So we got the trees and stuff. But I liked the family stuff. Like, I liked eating with family, and I did like the mornings and the you know, Santa would leave presents, and I love all that stuff. But I'm fascinated by all the Christmas, you know, like the history of where all these traditions came from.
Yeah.
And I would say that my favorite, and it could be complete bullshit. You never know. But I love these, you know, about the whole, you know, that the connection between Santa Claus and like psilocybin mushrooms. You know that story?
Yeah. I'm actually a great fan. I'm a great fan of them myself, to be fair.
It's amazing because the whole idea is like, you know, having the tree in your house, it's all very like, it's not religious. It's like the pagan. It's a pagan situation.
Well, you're talking to the converted here. I mean, like, do you know that if you look at any of the Irish symbols or Celtic designs or drawings, if you think of Newgrange and all these kind of fantastic sort of stones and drawings that are all sort of spirals that look like kind of shamrock and stuff like that, circles. A lot of people have actually said that if you actually are off your tits on mushrooms and you look long enough at a shamrock, you know, you start to see these images, and that's what they were drawing. I mean, you know, I don't think early pagan man did not have an issue about knocking back a few mushrooms.
I love the stories of, like, the idea was the pagan shamans were finding, you know, the psilocybin mushrooms, and the only place they would grow would be underneath the trees of the pine trees, and they look like little packages. And
oh,
then
no, they'll grow anywhere. They definitely don't have to be under trees.
Well, but they liked, I guess this particular story is they liked it underneath the pine trees, and then the shamans would hang them up on the fireplace to dry, and that was the kind of, there was this idea of the gifts and the trees, and I loved all that stuff, and I loved all those, like, those weird stories, and then how in the United States Coca-Cola kind of really helped push
the
concept.
Yeah, I mean, Santa Claus was
of,
never red, was he? It was always, I think originally blue or something like that. It was Coca-Cola made him red.
That's the craziest part, is they made him red, and he's always these. I mean, I bought my kid before I went to the supermarket to get stuff for my daughter for when she came home, and she likes the, you know, Christmas time we have a couple Cokes. We don't drink them often, but we get glass bottle, traditional classic Cokes in the glass bottle, and there was something to that. I you know what, I'm not mad about that either. I mean, it does show the commercial aspect of Christmas and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, you can only imagine the Chinese whispers. I mean, what will, in multiple generations down the road, what will happen? But just to jump back into the whole element of the storyteller, I was at the most magical gig. I don't know if you ever heard of the musician called Glenn Hansard. He is the Irish guy behind that film Once. He was in a band called Interference, you know, probably one of Ireland's more famous kind of musicians, who has a feckin' set of lungs on him. Like, he doesn't need an amplifier, you know, and speakers. He can just perform in front of, a crowd of people on his own and just have everybody captivated. And he came around with I'm after blanking his name. I'll get the name in a second. I'll post it. But he was with a friend of his who is a storyteller from Devon. And he was the warm-up before Glenn went on. This other guy kind of had he was the traditional, because the Irish have their tradition of the Shanachí, the Shanós, that element of telling the story. And sometimes it's not about a complicated story. It's all about the telling of it. And and it comes from a tradition of basically entertaining. And, you know, people would buy you pints. If you told a good story or a good poem or you broke into song, somebody bought you a pint. And that was just the background of the whole element. But it was the passing forward of stories. And the whole thing that's captivating, and that element of the storyteller is amazing. And traditions have come from a very simple point, but been given these very complicated stories that have become probably a lot of Marvel movies now at this stage, if you know what
right.
I mean.
Right. So what are some of the traditions that you have in your family for Christmas?
I think a lot of, do you know what? One of the ones I was just eating before I came out, like we get a jamón. And that, you know, one of the a Spanish kind of jamón, the pata negra jamón, and that's a true luxury it's a long, like, every day just take a couple of slices off, put the fat that you've taken off back on top of it, wrap it up in the tea towel, and you know till the next day, and it's just we all gather around it, and my kids are now getting the hang of, I've actually seen them, you know, getting a hand and now slicing it, because it's that kind of long, careful, thin slices coming off it. And it's
with a very thin, with a knife that's has like a 3/4 inch from the heel to the edge. You can't have a lot of steel because otherwise it just kind of catches.
Oh no, it's a lot like a salmon, like slicing salmon, right, or most kind of things. I mean, like, it's, I think unlike perhaps gravlax, where you have this long thin slice, the Spanish one is just kind of lots of little pieces that are perfect bite size and like that. But again, that's I think. Probably one of our traditions that we've just been doing for a long time as a family thing here, because mum's Spanish connection. Apart from that, there's the Christmas swim, which I've talked about before, where we'll my wife and a bunch of the kids are going to go in at midday on Christmas Day. They all get onto the skull and everybody gathers in their over the top Christmas jumpers and everybody jumps in the sea. And it's usually for a charity, a fundraiser. But that's kind of like that middle of the day. You know, it gets people to, you know, get off their asses and get out of the house and get dressed, you know, on Christmas Day. And that's a nice kind of tradition we have here. Apart from that, I think a lot of very typical Christmassy things, and most of it's always about the kids. That's the beautiful part about it, you know. It's about it's about them. And I think we're probably going to, you know, watch a couple of tacky movies. And I want to watch, do you know, they haven't seen it yet. Forrest Gump, you know, or one of these kind of type. I mean, it's one of those classic movies, you know. I just want to watch a good movie with the kids that they're kind of like, you know, that would be
some of our winter traditions is we like to watch Moonstruck in the wintertime. For some reason, we'll have pasta and we'll watch Moonstruck, and it is set in the winter, and there is something about it that's very like, that's every time my wife and my daughter, we always watch Moonstruck. We love that movie. And we've been recently, in the past about 5 or 10 years, we've been doing the Feast of Seven Fishes, which is this Italian kind of, I don't know if it's Italian or Italian American, but it's we'll cook seven different fish. And last year my neighbor's wife passed away, mm-hmm. so we've been having him over. He had him over last Feast of Seven Fishes, and we're having him over again. And we're thinking about what we're going to make, and we've made some decisions. We're going to do a seafood paella, and cool. We're going to do some other stuff. And we like it because it's like, my wife loves these traditions, and she really, I don't know if we're going to get a Christmas tree, but she makes it very festive in the house. And, and it's, frankly, I'm terrified of Christmas trees in the house, only because, like, I see these videos of people's, how fast they catch on fire and they,
Never mind that.
Down.
We have the, I mean, everything in your house is fucking flammable at the end. I've got a timer switch on the Christmas lights, and that's one thing you can see.
There's something, because they get so dry and it's like they go right up. But I don't know if we're going to get a Christmas tree or not, but we get it up. My wife gets all the stuff.
And get a little potted one and like just keep horses. It going. Like, keep it at the back of the workshop or something like that for the rest of the year.
They cook like crazy. And I do love the time we have together as a family. And we don't have a lot. My mother is really not well. We're going to go visit her. She's, you know, she doesn't remember me some days. And she doesn't have a really good sense of, it's okay. I mean, it's part of life. I mean, she doesn't remember, you know, she doesn't have a sense of time, and she's...
The long-term and the short-term memory are bizarre. Like, she probably still remembers her childhood events that have happened.
Well, she asks about if her parents are still alive, and the hardest part. I'll tell you funny. So this is like gallows humor, and I'm just going to do it because it was kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
So we were there visiting her, and she said, she turns to me and she goes, "We're sure my parents are dead, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm sure your parents are dead. I'm sure your grandpa and grandpa have passed away a long time ago, but you know, we were there and you know." And then she says, "Has anyone else died?" And my wife wasn't really thinking it. She goes, "Yeah, your brother Bill died a few years ago." And she goes, "She did? She did? He did? Bill died?" And I'm like, no, he's okay. Everything's okay. This happened a long time ago. And it happened a long time ago. It happened a long time ago. And then my wife was like, put her hands on her face, because why did you? And I'm looking at her like, just don't say, nobody's dead. Nobody's dead. I said, everybody's fine. Everybody's fine. Don't worry, nobody else is dead. Everybody's fine. And I start laughing. I'm like, "Mom, everybody's fine." And she goes, "Well, some of them aren't fine if they're dead." And it was just the funniest. Well, not all of them are fine. Some of them are dead. Oh, it was just really, this is really funny moment of, like, you know, just total madness. So we'll go see her. We'll go see her. And then my poor kid. My poor kid came back from California. She's freezing.
Is she back already? Okay, cool.
She came back a couple days ago. She's come back. She's got to get 4 wisdom teeth removed.
Been there and done that. Fucking sucks.
And she's got jury duty this week. So she is so miserable.
It kind of brings the expression like pulling teeth, huh?
Well, she's an adult now. She's 20. She just turned 20. I'm like, that's what happens.
I told you this before, didn't I? I think the Irish butchers are exempt from jury duty. Did I ever tell you that one?
No.
Apparently, in many places around the world, job kind of characters are exempt from jury duty, and I think butchers are one of them, because I think when it comes to something like murder or whatever else, they tend to be a little bit more morbid about it. Like, oh shit, fuck it, it was coming to him. You know,
I tell you what, I've told this story before, but I my dad was friends with the district attorney, and he told me how to get out of jury duty. But I said, just say you knew the district attorney, he's a family friend. And I said it when they asked if there was any reason why you can't serve. And I said, well, I'm friends with my family, grew up with the district attorney, and they put me right on the trial. It completely backfired. Yeah. I was on a trial for a month. It sucked. But yeah, you know, so she's excited. She's going to be here for about 5 weeks. And so far, we're having a great time. But
would she join you with the cooking?
Yeah, she's an awesome cook. She made
fantastic.
She's an awesome cook. She actually worked. She did a whole summer working as kind of like the sous chef of this bakery, and
yes.
She's been really amazing. I mean, they made croissants and they made all this French pastry, and she was the morning baker, and she did a great job. And she's going to go back and do a couple shifts to help out the place during Christmas time. But she's an awesome cook, so
yeah.
I do love cooking with her. And she just asked me to make some. She has some specific tools. She wants me to make a bench scraper.
Oh yeah,
you know, those
yeah.
bread bench scrapers. She wants me to make one with like a fancy handle, and I said I'd do that for her. And she wants some pastries tools with some, you know, some G10 handles. So I'm going to do that at some point. But she doesn't know where to put them, right? But she didn't know where to put them. She's in a dorm. She can't really. I mean, we're going to work on that, and you know, it's just like there's a lot of parts of this time of year that's kind of like good and bad. I mean, we try to spend as much. We cook a lot at home, but we try to go to as many other local restaurants as possible because the area we're in right now, we're hurting. We're hurting.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with – I'll tell you a funny story. A lot of them – I got reached out by this consortium of people in the area, and they're really trying to – they had a really lousy fall and a lot of the restaurants in our town, and a lot of it's because the crime rate is up in our town, and the city has like pulled the plug on a lot of like police programs that were really like we kind of needed, and so the crime's up. So they were asking me to be involved with some things, and I'm helping promote social media. And we're also going to a lot of these restaurants. So we went to this holiday market in our town, and I bumped into this councilman that I know. He's a good guy. I've known him forever before he was a councilman. Now he's been a councilman forever, and he goes. And we're walking around on all these little stands, and she's selling, you know, from wine. There's a wine guy there, and there's like little baubles and like little, and it's freezing. And I'm like, I'm gonna go down here. I'm gonna make nice, and then we're gonna get the fuck out of here because it's too cold. And the councilman turns to me. He's like, how come I don't see a Fader Knives booth here? And I don't know what came over me, and I said, don't you think there are enough knives in the streets of our town right now? I said, you really want me down here, don't you think? I figured you'd think there are enough knives in the streets in this town. Did not go over great. However, I don't regret saying it. It was it was hilarious. I was just like, I'm not your guy. I think maybe reconsider. But at the same time, it's like too cold. I ain't doing that. But we're trying to spend as much time and money in our local economy as possible because, you know, come January, all these restaurants get, you know, that's the worst part of the year.
Mm. I think that's interesting. Like, it's kind of like Christmas buying and stuff like that is another thing. I kind of noticed that I kind of find it harder in some ways to almost buy after many, many years, I suppose, because it tends to be the same things that are in your locality, you know,
right.
In some kind of way. So continuously finding things without kind of going mail order or doing anything like that can be kind of difficult. I mean, I always find that, you know, hardware stores and everything, you know, support local like mad. But after a while, you kind of go to your craft shows or whatever else. And there's some tat I'm just not going to fucking buy. You know, kudos to you. Great idea. But I just know that I'm buying that as, you know, and I'm going to regret it. It's just not going to be something we use. It's like a token.
Yeah.
And I've kind of just become a hard ass now, and you know, if I really don't think I'm going to use it, I just won't. Even if I want to support, I just can't keep. What's that? Shooting up my place with shit. You know?
Yeah, shit up your place with crap.
Yeah. There you go. But still, I do love seeing the originality of people pulling out good ideas and making kind of wonderful things.
You know, we try to go to as many restaurants as possible in our neighborhood, and it's just like that's kind of our way of like trying to contribute. I mean, these little tiny crafty guys. I'm not going to get a little stainless stained glass bauble. You know, that's just not really kind of where I'm at. But you know, we definitely support this. We're going to take our neighbor to this really nice restaurant that we go to every so often, and we'll hit a couple other restaurants and just try to like, you know. I like supporting the local economy. I like also knowing the people of the places that I go to. So we're going to try to do as much as we can. But at the same time, we love, you know, at our house, I mean, the food is good. So it's like if my daughter cooks or I cook.
That's a big deal. Like that's a big thing. It's like sometimes going out, like don't mind comfort food or whatever else, but you know, I do know that we can knock up food very quickly and easily at home.
Yeah.
And when you don't feel like cooking. But one of the plans I have, there's a couple of really amazing places that are nearby me. There's a couple of Michelin star guys within probably half an hour, 40 minutes drive from here. And I've got a project with them that I've been probably kept pushing on, but this is becoming a new twist. I very much want to, do you know the way you constantly question yourself when it comes to knife making? The combination of the wafer thin, delicate, precise yeah. cutting machine versus the knife that you feel in the wrong hands got it damaged and dinged. And then it's the
right.
the sort of the compound convex diamond grind and the
yeah.
the flat side and the convex tip and the rounded sort of tip at the top and the sort of a rounded spine or the size of the choil around the finger, whether it should be on the pinch grip or if it should be whatever else, and the balance and the weight. So I know that different folks, different strokes, and sometimes when you're making the knife, it just makes itself. Like you just go with it and you feel what's right and you know, it all comes together. And fuck it, we've been doing it long enough now that we have our things, but there'll always be a little lean towards one direction or the other. So what I wanted to do is an actual project with some of my fancy chef friends, basically. It was do a pass around with a series of knives. They're either going to be identical, with subtle changes, and that's going to be based around edge geometry, different grinds, and different elements that I actually question yeah. myself. And I'm going to ask them very much on a case of, excuse me, I'm going to ask them very much which they preferred, what they liked. And I fucking guarantee you that you know, one guy is going to contradict another one. You
right.
know, this was my favorite, and then somebody's going to say, actually, this was my favorite, this is one I didn't like, and they could be almost different. That's the beautiful thing about what we do, and it's a lovely thing about food. What one person finds is spicy, another person likes mild, so on and so forth. And thank God the world is different and it takes all types. But still, I want to, I actually am interested in the process of making this selection. I mean, trying to come up with a project of the knife roll with alternating or breaking down what tools do I have in my arsenal, and then actually how to put together a selection of knives that I can give to chefs that are friends of mine on a review panel, kind of like discussion board type kind of scenario to actually learn from, or if anything, just bond with them over.
And yeah.
you can't help but learn. I mean, if they all in like undeniably all come back with the same points on which was their preferred and which one that wasn't, or, you know, certain feedback, then that actually educates me more, you know? And I think that is a little project for spring next year I want to do with actually one of the guys I grew up with, Robbie Kraftjack. He's in the next town over from me, and I met him at the gig last night. We said this was a fun project for us to, an excuse for us to get together and experiment. And I think that's, you know, again, it's nerding out. It's the devil's in the detail. I sent some knives into Eating Tools, and Abe had he actually had some interesting feedback and thoughts as well about what he liked, because I was asking him, because of course, you know, that man has some of the best right. knives in the world in his fingers.
Yes.
And so they're the guys that give the best feedback and the whole process, you know. But again, materials will dictate. I mean, and you know, moods and the everything will always evolve and change. And yeah, but anyway, that's a springtime project.
I think the most amazing part about knife making is there's not one right way.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you look at the history of culinary knives, I'm just talking about culinary knives, there's so many different things that your people are just used to. And there's so many different opinions because there's so many different options.
Yeah.
It's like spam. It's like the spam thing. Some people, yeah. you know, some people don't want spam. And yeah. and some people say, oh, they have fond memories of spam. And it's the yeah. same thing with knives. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think that for me, I've always tried to make something for the customer that is maintainable.
Yeah.
And sometimes these razor blades that people are coughing up, they look great for the first few cuts. But I mean, when it comes down to kind of like maintaining them, they can be impossible.
Or vice versa, maybe that they can also, yeah. I mean, like they are precise tools that in the wrong hands can get damaged.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I think my business is really like, my business honestly, the biggest thing that I've noticed in the past 5 years, not since the beginning, but like I've really focused on, is we're also a customer service business. So like I'm very much along the lines of, it's not over once you pay the bill and you get the knife. So if you have any questions or if you need help or you whatever you need, because one of the things that the crazy part about knife makers are, they don't realize that you good customer service can make that one customer a customer for life. But like how you have, you know, the same names, you see the same names when people are getting hams. I see the same names all the time buying more knives.
Yeah.
So I really feel as though for me, our business is not only making a great knife, but the customer services, our customer service is awesome. Our customer service is awesome. I mean, we're, Allison and I are sending emails Sundays and in the middle of the night and everything. People feel like they're getting that really high touch service. And if there's a problem, send it back. No questions asked. I don't make you, you know, no one has to read the, write me the Magna Carta and send pictures in. If you got a problem, send it in, you know, send it in. I'll take care of it. And then I'm a no questions asked situation. So I feel as though for me, it's not just the knife. It's also just knowing that when you get a knife from me, you're going to get, customer service is going to be with you the whole way. So if, I got one guy who doesn't want to sharpen the knife. I say, you send it to me every, send it to me anytime you want. And I'll send it right back. Guy buys knives for his kids. He buys knives and I take care of him and he likes it. And I think that there is a very similar to what you're doing with Gabin. You have, you're creating a relationship with these people. It's not just like they're gone after the knife's out the door and they're gone. You know, and that's the end of it. You don't worry about that. So for me, it's like, if I have a customer and they're like, well, I really, I had a guy, a baker who bought a offset serrated and he said, you know, I like this, but I wish it was a little bit longer. I'm like, I'll take care of you. I'll make you a new, I'll make you another one. I'll make you another one and nice and long, whatever you want. And I feel as though for me, that is one thing that sets us apart is I'm, when I say I used to make, I'm with you used to be a joke, you know, really was like, it was the open sesame of stopping a conversation. And now it's just like, you know, it is, I, you got one of my knives, I'll take care of you. That's it, period. And so I don't really worry so much anymore because I know that if somebody doesn't like something or something's wrong, send it back, I'll take care of you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you've seen people be happy with it. I think that, there's a very interesting character here in Ireland at the Sharpen Shack who actually, he seems to be, has a great reputation for sharpening knives, and everybody's, I think because we all repost him when he, our knives go back to him, because often there's, it's a selection of knives. You'll see several, you know, people luckily are buying from multiple makers, and you can see a knife roll that will have some from me, Sam Dunn, Sam Gleason, Hugo Byrne, you know, people internationally, Florentine Knives, what, you know, whatever is happening. You see these knife rolls going into your man, and it's fascinating to see the actual, the condition of them over time and kind of what comes of it. But actually that pleasure of the sharpening process, some people have very much embraced that as well. Blenheim Forge do a fantastic thing where they actually have in-house kind of knife sharpening classes where you can obviously bring your knives in, you get a free stone as part of it, and you learn how to actually sharpen them yourselves. It's like, you know, I can either give you a fish or I can teach you how to fish, you know?
right.
And I think that I've done those on a couple of occasions where actually sort of, you know, here are the whetstones, this is the basics, and there you go. But I think it's people often don't have that reputation or even don't realize, they probably haven't been that much involved with knives that joy, you know, they always get a kick out of a new knife because it's sharpened, but they probably get the same kick if they just sharpened half the knives they had, you know.
Right.
They feel it's just part of a process when the new knife arrives. But I think that's I think like you're saying, the community element of it is important. Like that is the infrastructure of knowing that they can be sent back if anything goes wrong, and like the dreaded washing machine scenarios, that's the one that pisses me off. Because what slightly pisses me off the most about it is actually for my knives especially, there's probably, it's half the job. It's like the knife, half the work was actually putting the handle together and making it for the knife as it was in making the blade.
Right.
And I don't think people see that and realize that. And so therefore, you know, there is that element of, I'll take care of it. Like, but really, this actually is a huge job.
This is, I know. You know.
But like you said, it pays for it. It makes sense. It makes sense to do it, and you see people write. And I think that actually, when you see people truly in distress, and when this kind of happens, you see them write, then you know it's a friend of a life, or definitely a bond has been improved on.
I had a customer who originally wanted to get a knife from a friend of ours, and he didn't return. He didn't send emails. He was asking questions. He wouldn't send emails. Wouldn't send this. Wouldn't send that. He got a knife, and then he said, I didn't like part of it. He sent an email. Didn't respond back. He got no customer service at all. Mm-hmm. And it really soured him. And then he got from me, and I took really, like, white glove care. And the guy's been with me now for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it's like he's just more and more and more. And he just likes the fact that he feels like he's getting it from a person who's answering emails and is attentive and is like a real person. I got on the phone with him once because he had some shipping issue. And I said to him, like, no matter what happens, I got you. You're not alone in this situation. I got you. And I feel like, you know, with the way business is these days, I think that the human touch is going to be the way of the future. Because unfortunately, it's like that's going to be the most important thing is the customer service. But I got to get a couple things in because we are at the end of the year. We are getting ready for 2025.
Yeah.
I want to know, what are you looking forward to in the new year?
Okay, I think one of the I feel like next year there's a couple of travel adventures to places I've never been before. This seems to be coming up. You know, I hadn't traveled for years, and I'm going to be going over to Norway. I'm hopefully going further afield. Maybe, I'm not sure if the adventure with Blenheim Forge going to Japan might be happening.
Whoa.
There was talk about that. I might go to the Austrian Knife Show in May. Hopefully meeting up with Gabe Fletcher. We have a project with a collaboration, and hopefully doing one of the beer things, which I'm looking forward to, because that's actually a three-way collaboration. It's the steel, a knife, our cheese washed in his beer, and the beer made with elements of our cheese merged together. And it's that I'm looking forward to. It's a three-way.
Jeez.
Then there is, I suppose, what else is there? We're taking down the entire sheeting off of our largest farm shed, and we're putting up new steel, and that's entirely getting covered with solar. I was always talking about biodigesters. We've actually done the crunching, and we're going down the solar road. So that's been paid for entirely by the knives for the betterment of the farm. So that's that. We're doing a solar farm on that one. That's about 130 kV of panels kind of going up on one shed. We're renovating the dairy, the cheese dairy. So we're going to put down a whole new floor, which is a big fucking deal, because we have to shut down for like two, if not 2 weeks at least, take everything or as much of it out, fix the whole place up, maybe play around with drains and put in new walls and doors or whatever else. And then we're going to put down a whole new kind of semi-resin floor and then renovations to kind of basically improve it. What we've discovered in the dairy is that, you know, the cheese that we make is fucking backbreaking work. It's incredibly hard work, the cheese making, and we have a dedicated, quite wonderful crew, and there's a few people that have come and gone over the years. And I think that part of us kind of realizes that in a modern world, you know, it was never a problem a generation ago. You just did what had to be done,
right?
But if there are elements of mechanization that will give you the exact same result, or some element of even the slightest things that can help, why are we not embracing that? So we have to look into it. I got no budget, but we still have to look into it. And I think also that element of dolling the place up and pride in place, you know, it is an old floor, it's an old building, you know, we're just going to give it a bit of love. And it kind of is that sprucing up that kind of invigorates, like we were talking about our workshops earlier on. This is something that will hopefully be an element of learning. And I think during that time of shutdown, I want to see if a few of the characters that work with us in the dairy want to go off to other cheesemakers and spend some time there. And maybe make cheese in other places or do different things. So there's that element of things. So the cheese, the smokehouse, the knives, there's the forge is being built and the power hammer and that kind of side of things. And I suppose like these projects of basically improving. I feel I've kind of like we've always talked about it in the past. You know, do we make 100 small, simple knives or make 20 really fancy ones? And the happy place, of course, is playing between the two, you know. You know, when you don't feel like going heavily down the Mr. Miyagi kind of road and making perfection. And, you know, you can just do some simple and honest knives for honest friends and people and just make a good honest knife. And at the same time, you don't push yourself unless you're pushing yourself. You know, you don't grow and evolve if you don't put yourself in a place of discomfort. So sometimes I actually look forward to that and set myself a little goal. And that's something that's, I think, going to be sneaking in and out. No great plans for it, just I think as it unfolds. I'm interested to see with the knife side of things how, you know, the time. I mean, there's always a point. I always have this around the corner. At any moment, I may have to stop making knives. I might just find out that actually, do you know what? I have to spend all my time now at the farm or the cheese or the smokehouse or somebody's left or gone or something has kind of completely changed. And having so many tongs in the fire, you know, with 25 people in Gabin to make it work, there will come a point where perhaps, sadly, the one thing of knife making is the element that has to just be parked to you know, to prioritize the more important element of what we do.
Let's say not parked. Let's say, if anything, it's just kind of...
downscaled. Yeah.
Not even that. Don't say parked. Don't just say, like, you know, it's you're positioned.
I'd always sneak off to the workshop. But, you know, more or less getting at is that I would find that my time in the workshop would be drastically reduced is probably the simplest way of putting it. And I mean, like anything, if you crave it and love what you do, you will make time for it. You know, you will sneak off and do that no matter what. But I feel like the knives brings happiness. And I've often found that, you know, the combination of the work I would do with Yeti or... the elements of how we found ourselves on TV shows and in the public eye over the past couple of years has been largely because Gabin is a place where we are a farm that makes cheese and we have our pigs and friends who rear pigs for us that become the smokehouse. My sister has an organic garden. We have this beautiful part of the country, the kind of the touristy kind of remote rural area. You know, it takes a lot of the boxes that's kind of going on. There's a lot of things that are kind of down here. And merging them all together is a huge amount of work, but actually it has definitely helped probably make Gabin quite international. Whereas, you know, we're probably just making food for our own footstep. I mean, like 90% of what we make in the cheese is just sold in Ireland, bar maybe Paddy's Day in America. But the smokehouse, everything is sold within Ireland. So I feel like there's the integration of the multiple facets of things. Like, I suppose we'll always be there because we now appreciate that it's probably one of our strongest characteristics. It is probably what has put us out there is our multifaceted elements, because it makes us happy. Sometimes you want to fucking curl up in a ball and cry, but 80% of the time, you know, it's you know, when shit's not all going to be sunshine. Sunshine and roses, you know. But when it is, fuck, that's a good feeling.
Yeah. Here's to 2025, my brother.
Yeah. How about you?
I'm looking forward to everything. Hopefully the new website is dropping on the 1st of January. We're really kind of like streamlining to do new things. One of the reasons why we needed the kind of a more of a pro website anyway. And we're hoping to do a little bit more media, a little bit more like maybe television media. And that's one of the that's one of the reasons why we're doing the new website. And there's a lot of opportunities ahead, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm trying to age gracefully. My wife and I are learning different ways in which to live with, you know, that sounded weird, but we're learning how to like cope with the fact that we have a college age daughter who's not with us all the time. So we're doing more stuff together, a lot of stuff together, and you know, we're trying to figure to see if we can, you know, get a new house, move.
Contemplating about kind of aging ungracefully. I want to become like that.
Fuck that.
you know what? Stay healthy, but I want to maybe become like bad granddad.
Well, that's different. When I say age gracefully, we got a terrible healthcare system in this country.
Yeah, okay, true.
My wife's mantra is stay out of the hospital.
But that's somebody who's in hospital all the time on the other side of the scales. Exactly, yeah.
So she says to me, do whatever it takes to stay out of the hospital. you want to stay healthy and age gracefully, because you know you don't want to be on the other side of that. So we're everything's good. I mean, I'm very, very comfortable with my age. I like being where I'm at in terms of my life as a sculptor and as a knife maker, as a business person, as a father, as a husband. I'm very grateful. I don't take anything for granted, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's next. I'm very optimistic about 2025. I think that I feel like, you know, you have to be optimistic. If you're not optimistic, it's just like, you know.
Oh, PMA, you know, man. Positive mental attitude. Get the fuck on with it.
I'm with you, my man. Guys, I want to wish you all a wonderful, peaceful, and prosperous 2025. I'm grateful to all the people who have been listening to this podcast, following me for all these times, especially my brother, Fingal Ferguson, who I love. Ooh, I hope to someday meet you someday and we can have some fun. We'll fool around a little bit.
I'm coming to New York. I'm definitely coming to New York. I want to catch up with Billy Durney and stuff around.
All right. When you're in New York, let me know. Yeah. I'll come on down with you. We gotta meet up. I'm very grateful to my sponsors. I'm very grateful to the listeners of this podcast. I'm very grateful to my brother, Craig Lockwood, who he still pushes the buttons for me. He still makes it happen. He is my brother, and he is unbelievable.
Love you, Craig.
And Craig is the greatest, and I'm very appreciative of him and Mareko and all the guys on Knife Talk. All this podcasting has been a dream of mine since I was a child, listening to radio, and it has been something that's been, it's given me opportunities that I would never have had before, and I'm grateful to that, and I'm grateful to you, the listener. And I want to let you know, guys, I will be taking a couple weeks off through the holidays. You can listen to the back episodes. We're going to start off the new year with someone you all know. I don't want to say anymore, but 2025 is for you. And Fingal, I wish you and your family a wonderful Christmas and a wonderful, healthy, happy, and prosperous new year.
Thanks. Big love. Lots of you and love to you and all the family. And I hope you have a fantastic 2025.
You too, my brother. You too, my brother. All right, everybody. Listen, here's the key words: peace and prosperity and health. Good health, peace, prosperity for 2025. And we will see you in 2025. All right, Craig, take it away, my brother.
Ding dong merrily on high, Papa John's does Christmas pizza. Only £12 for a large, yes, Christmas on a pizza.
Start a new tradition with our All the Trimmings pizza featuring pulled turkey, sage onions, sprouts and roast potato tots. Papa John's, better ingredients, better pizza. Get a large pizza from the menu for only £12. You know, ho ho, it makes sense. Offer ends 1st of January 2025. Original large pizzas only, excludes additional toppings. Minimum spend for delivery, terms apply.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.